Thank you for joining with us in this study of a fascinating Old Testament book, Proverbs. This is wisdom from God, communicated mostly in brief statements. My friend Mike Wilson, in his book about Proverbs, aptly refers to these as God's text messages. To receive the full benefit of this instruction, it is critical to have the right frame of mind, and that frame of mind is where the book begins in Proverbs 1 and verse 7, the fear of the Lord. That's the beginning. With that attitude toward the lawgiver, these laws bring great benefit to our lives. As we follow these instructions, God is glorified, Christ is honored. We are at a point in these studies where there is a shift or change. With this class, we enter into a section sometimes called the Hezekiah section that begins with chapter 25. Have your Bible ready in Proverbs chapter 25. And notice the opening statement, "These also are Proverbs of Solomon, which the men of Hezekiah, king of Judah, copied." Now, we're still looking at the Proverbs of Solomon, and they were given by God through Solomon. But these that begin in chapter 25 were compiled or copied by scribes who worked on the staff of King Hezekiah. Now, the tone or content isn't that different. This just marks a transition in the way these are arranged and were originally distributed. So, in this class, I'm planning to take us through some of what is contained in Proverbs chapter 25. Some of this is new material. Some of this repeats or reviews what we've touched on earlier. All of this is good for us as we endeavor to live every day according to the provided wisdom of God, our Creator. Proverbs chapter 25, verses 2 through 7. "It is the glory of God to conceal a matter. To search out a matter is the glory of kings. As the heavens are high and the earth is deep, so the hearts of kings are unsearchable. Remove the dross from the silver, and a silversmith can produce a vessel. Remove wicked officials from the king's presence, and his throne will be established through righteousness. Do not exalt yourself in the king's presence, and do not claim a place among his great men. It is better for him to say to you, 'Come up here,' than for him to humiliate you before his nobles." This opening paragraph seems to be thematic, and by that I mean, rather than unrelated proverbs, this seems to be connected to a theme, and the theme is dealing with kings. The main idea seems to me to be how subjects should think of royalty, how to deal with kings. This passage begins by stating the vast difference between kings on earth and God in heaven. Kings on earth do not have resident, inherent knowledge concealed in their minds. Kings and rulers on earth have to search out matters, discover solutions, have people report to them, and advise them. One translation of Proverbs 25:2 says, "It is the glory of God to conceal a matter, and the glory of kings to investigate a matter." That's from the Christian Standard Bible. God has concealed in His mind a perfect understanding of everything. Kings on earth have to investigate. So this passage begins by stating the difference between kings on earth and God in heaven. God knows everything. Kings and rulers have to investigate. Next, "As the heavens are high and the earth is deep, so the hearts of kings are unsearchable. The subjects, the citizens, may not know what lies in the hearts of their leaders." Unless their leaders use Twitter. So, as chapter 25 begins, the editors in Hezekiah's staff write from God through Solomon about the difference between God in heaven and kings on earth. And then the point about subjects not being able to know the hearts of their leaders. Do you see? This is about kings and how citizens and subjects should see them and differentiate them from the vast, perfect knowledge God enjoys. The rest of this follows up. Remove the dross from the silver, and a silversmith can produce a vessel. Remove wicked officials from the king's presence, and his throne will be established through righteousness. Do not exalt yourself in the king's presence, and do not claim a place among his great men. It is better for him to say to you, come up here, than for him to humiliate you before his nobles. We should be aware one of the problems in government administration is the impurities in his staff. Wicked, self-serving people in the king's court or on the leader's staff or cabinet. The removal of the dross enables the silversmith to produce a good vessel. That's the imagery of corruption that sometimes occurs in high places. Good products come when the bad stuff is removed. The imperative is, in three words, remove wicked officials. Now, I want to stress this does not call for an armed government takeover. This is one of those passages subjected to some misuse. Militia groups might quote just these three words, remove wicked officials, and take that as their marching orders. That's not the intent of this passage. This is descriptive of what is typical in our age in and around the office of the king or leaders. Now, the point for the people who first heard or read this was, because of this, be cautious in dealing with the king and his officials. Don't impulsively assert yourself. Don't exalt yourself. Guard yourself in the presence of the king and his officials. That's wise. Well, what do we do with this? We add to this the instructions of the New Testament in Romans 13. We pray for leaders, respect the office, keep ourselves in subjection, and remember the leader may know things we don't know. And there may be men and women at top levels who are corrupt. No armed revolt is recommended. To the contrary, caution in approaching high officials is the counsel of this passage. It is the glory of God to conceal a matter. To search out a matter is the glory of kings. As the heavens are high and the earth is deep, so the hearts of kings are unsearchable. Remove the dross from the silver, and a silversmith can produce a vessel. Remove wicked officials from the king's presence, and his throne will be established through righteousness. Do not exalt yourself in the king's presence. Do not claim a place among his great men. It is better for him to say to you, come up here, than for him to humiliate you before his nobles. Let's move further into chapter 25. Continuing at verse 8, do not hastily come into court, for what will you do in the end when your neighbor puts you to shame? Argue your case with your neighbor himself, and do not reveal another's secret, lest he who hears you bring shame upon you, and your ill repute have no end. Let me read this again from another translation. This is from the Christian Standard Bible. Do not take a matter to court hastily. Otherwise, what will you do afterward if your opponent humiliates you? Make your case with your opponent without revealing another's secret. Otherwise, the one who hears will disgrace you and you'll never live it down. I think that's a good translation. From Proverbs 25, from verse 8 down through verse 10. Here's something that has always been a problem among human beings since the first institutions of civil courts, going to court hastily. In fact, this has almost become a mantra of our age, that quick threat, that you will hear sometimes. I'll sue you. I'll see you in court. We are a society with strong feelings about individual freedom, personal rights, compensation, and justice. And we have a system in this country and a mentality that encourages lawsuits. If you watch any TV at all, you've seen the commercials offering quick and hefty settlements if you think you've been injured. I found this. It is estimated that the annual cost to the U.S. economy for civil lawsuits is $233 billion. We know about frivolous lawsuits. Here in Proverbs, once again, we encounter the virtue of the pause. Slow down. Ask yourself, do I really have a case? Is this just? Is the evidence sufficient? And have I taken every possible measure toward resolution? Verse 9 recommends what Jesus recommended in Matthew. Make your case or deal with the problem with the fewest amount of people. Make your case with your opponent quietly. You may save yourself embarrassment in the end. Similar to this, and along this same line, Paul condemned hasty appeals to the courts against brethren in 1 Corinthians 6. He said, I'm paraphrasing, can't you settle this with the wise men among you? Jesus gave similar instruction in Matthew 5 and Matthew 18. So for us, don't rush into court to sue someone. Make every effort to settle disputes without public litigation. This is wisdom from God through Solomon, compiled by the scribes who worked for the king Hezekiah. Let's take up one more part of this in Proverbs chapter 25, 11 through 12. We've already brought this up in a previous study, but we're going to cover it again about words fitly spoken. Let's take up verses 13 and 14. All right, let's listen to this from the New Living Translation, Proverbs 25, 13 and 14. Trustworthy messengers refresh like snow in summer. They revive the spirit of their employer. A person who promises a gift but doesn't give it is like clouds and wind that bring no rain. For those of you listening who are not local, I'm in the Rio Grande Valley of Texas, McAllen, Edinburgh, and we've had some really hot summer days lately. Imagine being outside under the sun and there is a freak snowstorm. How good and refreshing. That's the image. And what is this about? Simply a trustworthy messenger. Someone who will take the message just as it is given and deliver that message in the exact original form. This passage is saying, this is so refreshing, it revives the spirit of the employer of the messenger. Well, one immediate application to this is for preachers, two preachers. We are messengers charged to take the message given in the Bible and deliver it just as it is written. I have opinions, but I can't add those in as if they were God's words. My charge is to deliver the message God gave just as God gave it. This is about integrity and responsibility in messengers. It is refreshing like snow in the summer for there to be this virtue, this integrity in messengers. Again, from the New Living Translation, a person who promises a gift but doesn't give it is like clouds and wind that bring no rain. Not much different in the English Standard Version, a man who boasts of a gift he does not give. Don't you get tired of that kind of person, those kind of people? They are loud at the promise end, but silent or unheard at the giving or fulfilling end. A good rule to follow would be, don't promise what you are not certain you can deliver. Don't promise what you are not sure you can deliver. I think there are people who love to make promises very quickly, impulsively. It makes them feel good. I'll take care of that. But they are not good at keeping promise. Short or absent on the delivery end. Somebody says, I'm going to put you in my will. I've got a huge bunch of money coming in, and when I get that check, I'm going to share that with you. Or as soon as I get everything in order, I'm going to pay you to have an all-expense vacation wherever you want to go. Well, this shows immaturity, a lack of integrity, a person who promises but doesn't deliver. A website I sometimes visit is called The Four Conversations. It has very good material about personal relationships, and I pulled this up from that site. It plugs into all that we're talking about here. It says, all of us have failed to keep a promise we made to someone. It might have been we forgot to make a call, failed to get something done on time, or only did part of what we said we would do. And even though we may have a good reason for breaking our promise, there are consequences nevertheless. Here are some of those consequences. Number one, people get upset. Although most of us don't like dealing with upset people, the fact is they have a right to be upset if we said we would do something and we didn't do it. We lose credibility. Credibility results from doing what you say you're going to do and doing that repeatedly. No excuses. We lose trust. When we fail to keep our promises, people see us as less trustworthy. And we lose affinity. People stop liking us as much. We want people to like us, but if we fail to keep promises, if we say we're going to do something and we don't deliver, people get upset. We lose credibility. We lose trust. We lose affinity. This is all true. But at the highest level, when we don't act on our promises, when we casually say we will do something, then we fail, we displease God. So let me read now these opening verses in Proverbs chapter 25. Let's put it all together. Proverbs 25, 1 through 14. These also are Proverbs of Solomon, which the men of Hezekiah, king of Judah, copied. It is the glory of God to conceal things, but the glory of kings is to search things out. As the heavens for height and the earth for depth, so the heart of kings is unsearchable. Take away the dross from the silver, and the smith has material for a vessel. Take away the wicked from the presence of the king, and his throne will be established in righteousness. Do not put yourself forward in the king's presence or stand in the place of the great. For it is better to be told, come up here, than to be put lower in the presence of a noble. What your eyes have seen, do not hastily bring into court. For what will you do in the end, when your neighbor puts you to shame? Argue your case with your neighbor himself, and do not reveal another's secret, lest he who hears you bring shame upon you, and your ill repute have no end. A word fitly spoken is like apples of gold in a setting of silver. Like a gold ring or an ornament of gold is a wise reprover to a listening ear. Like the cold of snow in the time of harvest is a faithful messenger to those who sent him. He refreshes the soul of his masters. Like clouds and wind without rain is a man who boasts of a gift he does not give. I notice now I've read that from something other than the English Standard Version, but it is extremely similar and helps us get another listen to Proverbs 25, 1 through 14. All right, what are our takeaways? Number one, kings, rulers, and presidents are not like God. They do not have perfect, resident knowledge. They have to read and study and learn and depend upon staff to bring them intelligence. Sometimes there is corruption at the highest levels. God holds perfect knowledge of everything. He doesn't depend on flawed people to inform him. He is perfectly informed all the time about everything. He is worthy of our obedience and trust. Pray for our leaders because they are imperfect and subject to mistakes, even corruption in themselves or in their staff. They are not like God. They need our prayers for their wise choices. Do not contemplate an armed revolt. All through Proverbs, there is that thread of warning. Be careful how you react in the presence of authorities. Especially if you're upset about something, don't rush into court. Don't take to the streets or join an armed revolt. In the end, it can turn out to your eternal shame. Have something to say like apples of gold in a setting of silver. Words fitly spoken. Be that person of caution, pause, integrity. Keep your promises while you stand on your principles. Thank you for listening to this episode. Next time, more to study from this section of Proverbs.